about an hour and a half ago. Father Kurt is now living in Appleton, a friend of ours in AA. Would you please help me welcome Father Kurt?
Good morning. I'm Kurt, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kurt.
Every time I have the occasion to address a group of fellow alcoholics, in my mind's eye, I go back perhaps 15 to 20 years. I was at that time working in Indiana. And I was helping out in a small country parish. I'm a Catholic priest. And at that time, we were still, in this parish at least, facing the wall. Those of you who are Catholic remember those days. It was a large church, actually. It was very high, and everything was built, you know, high. Up in front, there was a series of about 5 to 6 steps, the top of which the priest stood in front of the altar. The congregation was out in the back. I belong to a religious community, and I didn't wear my garb, but we wear these long habits. They're like gowns, you know, they flow. At that time, at least, we very seldom wore trousers underneath these habits. We would just wear our underwear. It was cooler in the summer. And I remember this particular day, it had been the first time I was at this parish. I started celebrating liturgy. I got about halfway through the Mass, at the most sacred moment, actually, right after what we call the consecration. I extended my arms to pray. The elastic in my underwear broke. It doesn't take much imagination to picture this. You know, I'm standing up on this high thing. Everybody can see, obviously, and this white thing appeared at the base of my feet. Okay? I really panicked. I didn't know what to do. And I felt, you know, if I bend down and pick them up, it's going to make, you know, it's just going to draw attention. So I turned around. We had little server boys at the time, and one on the one side, and he kind of looked, and I gingerly stepped out of them and kicked them over to the side. He grabbed them and ran off to the sacristy. Right? By this time, I was hearing just what you're doing. You know, people were laughing. The choir tried to sing a song after that, and it couldn't work. I was embarrassed, red. I feared that they would probably write the bishop and never have me come back again. And it was remarkable because I helped out in that parish for years after. And whenever an old parishioner, would introduce me to a new one, first thing they would tell them was this story. And it seemed to become a real bond in the community. It's really crazy. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I find that when I'm most uptight, and the things that I fear most, even if they would happen, become a source of bonding, become a source of shared joy, I guess, and there's really nothing to fear. So I stand before you today, notice in a suit, first of all. When I first saw the topic for the conference, I was very excited because I think that of all the topics you could have chosen, this was one of the wisest. We live in an era, a time, because of the frantic search for peace, that all of us desire a solution. In our own lives, each one of us has gone through turmoil, pain, anguish. We perhaps still experience this to a large degree. And if there's anything we're looking for, it's a solution. You just heard the preamble read. And again, I don't think we could improve on that. But in that preamble, there is such an emphasis on the spiritual part of the program. What I'd like to do today is to share just a few ideas that I have personally as Kurt about spirituality. I think when we talk about spirituality, first of all, we're talking about a quest, you know, a journey, a search, a process that each one of us is engaged in from the beginning of life until the end. And that search is to answer one basic question. And that is, what in the hell is life all about anyway? It really is. It's at the core of everything that we are as human. We are looking for a solution. We experience life in so many different ways. And deep down we know that it's got to have a direction. It's got to have a purpose. As soon as we get into that area, of course, we talk about our own lives and we talk about God. And throughout history, humankind has been searching, I think, for an answer to that question. They've come up with all different kind of answers. And I, in my lifetime, have kind of gone through the same process, maybe not recognizing it. Even as a priest, I have had to search, just as you do, for meaning and purpose in my life. For a God who maybe could bring that into my life. And that has led me through many different avenues. It's interesting. I think if you look back since the beginning of humankind, you'll find several different tracks that were followed or journeys that were taken by men and women. One was to posit a God, not just one, but two. If you go back to pagan literature, you'll find that. There are two gods, and that's based on human experience. Because if I go around, sometimes my life is great, sometimes it's lousy. Sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm depressed. Sometimes things go well, sometimes they're horrid. And therefore, people experiencing this said, must be two gods. One's a good guy, one's a bad guy. And the trick in life is somehow to get in touch with that good guy. If you do that and pray to him, things are going to go smooth in your life. If for some reason or other you get in touch with the bad guy, that's when bad things happen. And therefore, practice of religion, if you like, or spirituality in that posture becomes bargaining, real bargaining. Especially with the good guy. Get me out of this, God. Please, I'll do this, and I'll do this, and I'll do this. Sound familiar? You know? We still do that stuff. There's another view of God, and that is that there's not just two, but there's a whole bunch of them. And they're up there someplace. Incidentally, in both of these opinions, God is not present. He's out there kind of creating and then letting us go just to see what will happen. In the second one, you got all these gods, typified by Mount Olympus. Remember all the Greek gods? Huh? And they're all up there on the mountain, and they create you and I, and we're down here, and then they say, well, let's see what they bring us, joy or not. And then they put all kind of obstacles in our life. They fill our lives with misery at times, but the whole purpose is to see whether or not we are ingenious enough and creative enough to overcome the obstacles. And if we do, we get rewarded every once in a while. And if you're lucky enough to die and having succeeded in life, then the theory was that you become one of those gods on Olympus and you can arrange the obstacles. You know, that doesn't sound too bad. Anyhow. But again, you know, the whole thing there is competition and fear. And again, you'll notice God is not present. He is out there someplace. There was a God that I worshipped in my drinking days. And I think that God was kind of a combination of the two that I just described. First of all, God was not present. He was distant. He was a God I called on in my prayers. And usually, you know, when I prayed, it was to some being out there someplace. He was a God that I quickly grew to forget because of that. He was a God that I think our modern society would have no trouble worshiping at all. A God who said, hey, you are self-sufficient, Kurt. You can do it all. If you can't do it alone, boy, just align yourself with the power in the world and you'll make it. You'll be successful. He's a God who said to me, hey, Kurt, if you want to bad enough, there isn't anything you can't achieve. Be grandiose. Be grandiose. He's a God who said to me, like people, but use them a lot. Use them a lot. Because, you know, you only go around once, huh? And make it count. He's a God, in short, who said that life makes sense only if you succeed according to the standards of society. And it's rather with embarrassment that I stand before you and tell you that a Catholic priest subscribed to that theory. My God, not in language, huh? I didn't get up and tell people that. But in practice, to a large degree. When I started drinking, in the early stages, my drinking was not catastrophe. It was success. For me, drinking worked for a time. Some of my most creative moments were after drinking. I was running retreats, you know, and living on perhaps a bottle of vodka a day. And I don't mean one of these little ones. And those retreats were good. They were really good. After I sobered up, one of the people who had attended one of the retreats and recorded it gave me the tapes. And it was really good. So at that time, at least, alcohol did not hinder my functioning. I was a good preacher. I received a lot of compliments. I was successful. And although, as I said, I'd never pray this way, my prayers were all, oh God, you are God, and I am a creature, and I worship you, and you are responsible for all the things I do. But deep down in my own heart, it was Kurt doing them. And Kurt was getting the praise for it and eating it up. As my alcoholism developed and grew, things began getting rather hectic. I was not as well-versed as I thought. My friends, who I deliberately did not see because I didn't want them to know a degree of my drinking, soon abandoned me. They left. I was a solitary drinker. There were many times I remember being in my room alone, working. But working not because I enjoyed it, but merely to fill the time between drinks. There were times when I questioned how much I was drinking, and guilt set in. And I would very quickly cover that up by having another drink. I was working for the bishop at the time in my diocese. It was kind of interesting. We were going around doing workshops. And I still can't understand this. There were five of us who would go on workshops. We'd travel throughout the diocese. We'd go way up the northern part of the country. Come back sometimes at 3 a.m. And I was imbibing at that time like crazy, you know. A shot perhaps at least every 15, 20 minutes. And, you know, we had these long robes I told you about. They got big pockets. I remember having a flask in each pocket. And if I didn't have those along, I was lost. And still at night when we'd come home from wherever we were, guess who they would ask to drive? Yeah. Talk about insanity, huh? They would ask me to drive, and I would drive very dutifully and very obediently. We never got in an accident. And I think that's maybe when I really started believing in the fact that there is a God, and He is not out there He is present here. My life deteriorated until I developed cirrhosis of the liver. And my physical well-being went down the tubes. I was hospitalized. I was in the hospital for over a month. My doctor saw me after, and he said to me, "Do you drink?" And as any good alcoholic would tell him, I said, "Certainly, doctor. But just on a few social occasions." And he believed me. He told me, however, I had to stop drinking, no more drinks for the rest of my life. I didn't believe him, and I questioned him on that spur of the moment. I said, "Do you mean never? You mean just a large quantity?" And he says, "Never again." And I said, "What if I do?" And he said, "You'll die." And that shook the heck out of me. For 8 years, I stopped drinking. I didn't have a drink for 8 years. And I had no idea, at least consciously, that I was an alcoholic. Never attended a meeting. I was an alcoholic kind of at distance, huh? About 8 years later, I had a heart attack. And again, probably due to the fact that that summer I had began drinking. I was over in Germany, and if you've ever been in Germany, they have these small steins of beer. I told my brother, "I'm going to limit my drinking. One beer a day." Now, that's not bad. Except, like I said, they're like this. And it kept me on a permanent high, I'm convinced. I came back to the States after that, and shortly after, about a month after I came back, I had a heart attack. After the heart attack, I was being transferred to a new position, and my superior, and again, certainly God intervening, my superior came up to me and asked me, "Are you an alcoholic?" And I said, "My gosh, no, I drink a lot, I did, but I gave that up. No, I have a periodic beer." They said, "Why would you even ask a question like that? My behavior been bizarre or odd?" And he said, "No." He said, "I noticed in your medical records," he said, "your diagnosis having cirrhosis of the liver." And I said, "Yeah, that's because I didn't eat right." And he said, "Wrong, huh?" He said, "Wrong." He said, "You can't have cirrhosis of the liver, Kurt, without having the disease. It's impossible. You'd be dead otherwise." So I went to treatment for 3 months. And it was like a new life began for me. After I was at treatment for 2 days, there were no questions. I knew I was an alcoholic. And from that moment on, a whole new journey began for me. A whole new spiritual journey in particular. I loved God from the very first time I think my mother mentioned him, because my mother and dad were very positive people. I grew to love God as I grew older. But as I said, what happened along the way in that process was that I forgot God and started making Kurt God. My tradition and my love were still there, but they were dormant. And what happened when I came to AA was that they were revitalized, they were brought to life in a new way. And I owe that to the program, and by the program I mean the people like you. Spirituality in AA is something very special. And it's interesting because, just as I said, humankind has developed images of God throughout the centuries, so too I believe there is a God of AA. And I believe that I found in that God a God that I can truly worship. He is a God, first of all, of love, who is present. Whenever I go to meetings, I hear this. I hear it in many different ways. I hear about a person who was tempted to drink and didn't. I hear about a person who went to see a fellow alcoholic in the middle of the night to bring comfort, to bring courage, to perhaps take that person to treatment. I hear about people who are available to one another, not during office hours, but 24 hours of every blessed day. He's a God not only of love, he's a God of compassion and understanding. I hear stories around the tables, and all I have to do is look at my own story. I hear stories around the table which would make your hair stand on end. Stories which, when shared in the wrong environment or to the wrong people, would strike sheer terror. And yet in the context of that story being told, I see a person who knows without any doubt, that they are forgiven and accepted. He is a God who never closes a door, who knows us as we are, and who loves us because of it. He is not only a forgiving God, He is not only a God of love, but He is a God of peace and fellowship. And again, I come around those tables, you know, and you can see doctors, lawyers, you can see mechanics, you can see garbage collectors, and nobody walks into a meeting and publicly says, "Hi, I'm Joe, a lawyer, and I'm an alcoholic." Never. We cut through all the garbage, and we express what I learned a long time ago, and that is that God is a God of all people. God is a God who loves everyone, irregardless of position, status, race, creed, color, or anything else. And He's a God who wills the good of every human person. And the beauty of AA is that I see that lived. We're not talking about a God of theory. We're talking about a God who takes flesh in His people. I'd like to read to you, just a moment, about that God. And I'm going to ask you to do something special for me today. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. If anybody starts snoring, poke them. Close your eyes and just picture this. And don't think, just feel. Just feel. Picture this. When God began creating the heavens and the earth was at first a shapeless, chaotic mass, with the Spirit of God brooding over the dark vapors. And then God said, "Let there be light." And light appeared. And God was pleased with it, and divided the light from the darkness. So He let it shine for a while, and then there was darkness again. And He called the light daytime, and the darkness nighttime. And together they formed the first day. And God said, "Let the vapors separate to form the sky above and the oceans below." And so God made the sky, dividing the vapor above from the water below. And then God said, "Let the water beneath the sky be gathered into oceans, so that the dry land will emerge." And so it was. And then God named the dry land earth, and the waters seas. And God looked at what He had made and said, "It is very good." And He said, "Let the earth burst forth, and every sort of grass and seed-bearing plant and fruit trees, with these seeds inside the fruit, so that these seeds will produce the kinds of plants and fruits they came from." And so it was. And God saw it, and He said, "It is good." And then God said, "Let there be lights in the sky to give light to the earth and to identify the day and the night. And they shall bring about the seasons on the earth, and mark the days of the years." Then God made two huge lights, the sun and the moon, to shine down upon this earth. The larger one, the sun, to preside over the day, and the smaller one, the moon, to preside through the night. And He also made the stars. And God looked again, and He said, "It is good." Then God said, "Let the waters teem with fish and with life, and let the skies be filled with birds of every kind." And God said to them, "Multiply and stock the oceans, and birds fill the sky, and let your numbers increase." And God looked again. And he said, it is good. And then God made every sort of cattle and animals and reptiles. And God was pleased. And then God looked about his whole creation. And he said, let us make man, someone like ourselves, to be the master of all life upon the earth and in the skies and in the seas. And so God made man like his maker. Like God did God make man. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them and told them, multiply and fill the earth and subdue it, for you are masters of the sea and the fish and the birds and the animals. And then God paused and looked over all he made. And he said, it is very good. That's a creation story. And in that story, I think you have told what our life is all about. God created us in his own image. And that means that in the eyes of God, there is not a human person like you or I that doesn't have priceless value. That in God's eyes, there is nothing so important as a human person. That every one of us who are present here today is a unique expression of that God, given flesh and blood. And the purpose is very clear. The purpose of God's creating is to allow us to come to know him and to share his life. Not as unique individuals, not as some isolated people, but as a community of people, as a human family. And I think what I find in AA is that lived out. That's the beauty of the movement. That's the beauty of what we're all about. The beauty is that God takes the limited and the finite and the weak, and he confounds the brilliant and the powerful of the world. He does that consistently. Consistent. And when we talk about spirituality, I think it means coming into contact and being aware of that reality. That there will never again in the history of humankind be another you. That your life matters. Marvelous creation that we just read about. That if you and I did not exist, God's creation would not be complete. And in some way, we don't understand totally. You and I are responsible for the building up of this whole magnificent picture. It is going somewhere. And I think there's a very special group of people in that process. Alcoholics. And the people they touch. We have been crippled by a disease, and yet God has given us the resources we need to overcome that ailment. And then he takes us as a group of people, he's not satisfied with that, and he creates in our midst a way of life that the whole world is looking for. Do you ever think about that? It's incredible. Where else can you go and be totally accepted? Where? You know, I was out in San Antonio several years ago. I got down there, and I'm all alone in the city. I don't know anybody. And I go to an AA meeting. And all of a sudden, I've got a whole room of people I know who accept me as I am. Not as they want me to be, but as I am. Who are warm and loving and concerned and caring people. People of faith. Deep faith. By faith, I mean believing in the purpose and the meaning of human existence. People who will give themselves to you On that occasion, three people invited me to stay with them. They knew I was in town and didn't know I had a place to stay. Where do you find that? You know, my God. Even in a motel, you got to show your ID and, you know, your money and everything else, huh? Not so in the movement. That's spirituality. That's spirituality translated into concrete living reality. You and I are called, my dear people, to be part of a very small group of people known as alcoholics. And I believe that God has destined AA to impact not only on the lives of people who have a disease, not only on the lives of other people who also are sick because of their connection with them, Al-Anon folk and Al-Anon, but to impact on the whole of creation, on the whole of the world. Can you imagine what would happen if for one day the whole world lived like recovering alcoholics? Just think about that. You know, where everybody would be doing away with their anger, resentment, where status and position wouldn't mean anything, where we would genuinely meet everybody with an open heart and open mind. Can you imagine what would happen? Wouldn't need Ronnie running over to Iceland, huh? We wouldn't need nuclear arms. What for? You know, that's like saying every alcoholic, make sure you bring your gun to the meeting, huh? You know, it's crazy. We live in a sick world, my dear people. And if you've ever heard that the reason that we are, you know, really in need of help is because we're sick, that's true to a degree. But my God, look around you. The beauty of the disease is we know we're sick. Step one, huh? That should be preached in every legislative capital. We are a sick people, and that's what God says in this book that I just read to you from. Because right after this creation story, it tells us that things don't go right. The author wrote it, and he handed it out, and he said, this is the way God meant things to be. And then he looked around, and he said, well, why isn't it? And you have the story of the fall, Adam and Eve, you know. And it's a story of the fall. It's a story. And the meaning of the story is, hey, everything goes right if we let God be God and if we are creature. If we accept our humanness. And I think that's what spirituality is all about. It means accepting who we are as creature. Accepting who God is as God. And knowing that as we come from the hand of God, we are good. With a dignity and a worth that cannot be matched. And that there is a purpose and a meaning to our lives. There was a man by the name of Martin Luther King, whom you all know was a prophet. And he died as a prophet. He died giving his life for what he believed in. And shortly before he gave his life, he gave a talk, which I think was a masterpiece, obviously. It is. And in that talk, he talked about having a dream. Having a dream for all peoples. And I have a dream too. I'd like to share that dream with you this morning. I have a dream that someday, in the whole of the given world that you and I know, there will be no alcoholic who is actively living his disease that will not know that they are loved. I have dreamed that someday every person who is touched by the disease of alcoholism in the form of Al-Anon, Al-Anon persons will know that they are cared for by a loving God who gives them the resources they need to live a truly human life. I have a dream that someday you and I will live our program so well that the rest of the world will look to us and say just one thing. And as my God, look the way they love one another. And somehow we'll learn from sick people like us what life is truly all about. I have a dream that someday you and I will stand before or be present to one another in the active presence of God. We will know Him as He is. And we will be gathered together with all the billions of alcoholics who have lived in the course of human history. And we will see how you and I have touched and changed the process of all of humankind because we have a disease called alcoholism. I have a dream that one day every person who has been touched by this disease will give thanks to God because what appeared to be a curse is truly a blessing. I thank you this morning for being my co-brothers and sisters, fellow alcoholics. I thank you for being God's little ones, to whom He is specially present, and in whom He, in particular, works His wonders. I thank you for allowing me to be present here to share with you. Thank you.